You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Plumbers Local 8 and Teamsters Local 41. Plumbers Local 8 has been part of Kansas City since 1890. The plumber protects the health of the nation. And Teamsters Local 41 is the largest Teamster local in Kansas City and the surrounding area. It represents approximately 6,000 members in many industries, including freight, UPS, dairy, food and beverage, bakery, warehouse, car haul and car dealers, car rental, parking and show work. We help workers and their families achieve and live the American dream. Our members are hardworking, patriotic, caring, family-oriented, and civic-minded, and we proudly support our men and women in uniform that put their lives on the line every day to protect our rights and freedom. And we thank our underwriters for their support to the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. Here's what's coming up tonight. On April 14th, Teamsters will be in Washington protesting pension cuts. On April 17th and 18th, labor, civil rights, environmental, and student organizations will surround the Capitol with a democracy awakening, protesting the attack on voting rights and money in politics. Then, in July, the 8th through 10th, educators will march for public education and social justice. It seems everyone's marching on Washington. Find out about it on tonight's show. In the news, Nixon vetoes paycheck deception bill. How many more will there be? And local group to send water to Flint. Our feature at the end of the show is Washington Window on Workers. We'll talk about the new Department of Labor rule aimed at outing union busters. Now for the news.
The news from our side, March 25, 2016. Brandon Weber, a former steel worker local president in Kansas City, reports in the Progressive that union members from across the country are donating time and resources to Flint, Michigan, helping provide a sense of humanity to a community that needs it. Since the mass exit of auto jobs to low-wage countries and the Great Recession, Flint went bankrupt, and the Republican governor imposed an emergency manager on the city who made the disastrous decision, which ended up pumping poisoned water and corroding the pipes. Since 40% of Flint's residents live at or below the poverty level, people need help. Weber reports that unions from all over the Midwest have donated time, water, dollars, and more to help the residents of Flint get through this crisis that still rages on in spite of the fact that they're switching back to pure water. Firefighters, electricians, nurses, teachers, Teamsters, auto workers, plumbers, and government workers have been working to provide help. Many have come from Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, New York, as well as across the state of Michigan to help lend a hand where necessary, including installing water filters, all with volunteer labor. Much still needs to be done, like replacing corroding pipes to the houses in many of the neighborhoods, but things are finally progressing, thanks in large part to the help of organizations like Flint Rising, which is a leading grassroots effort to push for change. And now Kansas City is pitching in. On Saturday, April 2nd, the Kansas City chapter of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists will have a water collection for Flint and Teamsters 41 will use its 53-foot trailer to transport the water. They'll be collecting the donations of water at the UAW Local 249 between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. at 8440 Northeast 69 Highway, Pleasantville, Missouri.
Greg Davison, a union rep for the Sheet Metal Workers Local 2, is beyond frustrated with the lack of progress in contract negotiations for his members who work for Johnson Controls in Albany, Missouri. They make parts from scratch for heating and air conditioning systems. After five full days of negotiations, Davison says, "It's moving very slowly, but hopefully we will come to an agreement." This is a company that has a pattern of wanting to have its cake and eat it too. In 2006, they announced they'd be shutting down and moving to Mexico, but they kept a few workers in Albany just in case. Then they had to move back because too many parts from Mexico needed to be reworked. Low wages and quality products just didn't go together. Then Johnson Controls headquarters in Milwaukee took tax incentives to stay there, but their heads got turned by Tyco, based in Ireland. They could save $150 million in taxes by moving the headquarters there, so they announced a merger. Strangely, Johnson Controls CEO objected when he got criticized for this by Hillary Clinton, saying, "It would be irresponsible for us as a company to not take advantage of the opportunities that come along, but that's not the reason we're merging with Tyco." Right. He said that with frosting all over his face. In the current contract negotiations Johnson Controls is complaining about, they're complaining about excessive absenteeism. They have one of those point systems where you're fired after getting 9 points, and they want to cut it in half. The workers say it's the health insurance with such high copays that they never go to the doctor and they just stay sick that causes excessive absenteeism. The workers want more affordable insurance. Davison says the attendance policy breeds absenteeism. The Albany plant is expanding and will need more workers. Evidently, Johnson Controls wants workers but isn't willing to foot the bill to keep them. Just another case of wanting two contradictory things at the same time.
Anti-union bills this year in the Missouri legislature. At latest count, there are 9 so-called right-to-work bills, 6 bills repealing or modifying the state's prevailing wage law, 2 gutting workers' comp, 3 attacking project labor agreements, and 8 attacking the right of public employees. One of these anti-labor bills, HB 1891, has passed both houses, and last week Governor Nixon vetoed it. It's the so-called paycheck deception bill, which is aimed at dividing workers by cherry-picking which public employees it applies to, exempting first responders. Here's how the Missouri NEA explains paycheck deception. Paycheck deception laws, at their core, are attempts to limit the voices of educators, union members, and other public employees by creating burdensome legal hurdles. They rob the union members and associations for political action. Paycheck deception attempts to create burdensome logistic hurdles that interfere with how dues and voluntary contributions are collected and often require re-signing all paperwork every year. The Missouri AFL-CIO says, "This legislation is about politics, not economics. CEOs want to silence our voices, destroy our union, and silence the voice of all working people so they can push through radical legislation. Radical groups already have admitted that passing paycheck deception is the first step to eliminating unions. Missouri labor unions will wage a fierce campaign to block an override of Nixon's veto. That means they have to win the support of Republican legislators who are currently being threatened by primary challenges if they side with labor. The unions are asking everyone to contact their representative and their senator and ask them not to override Governor Nixon's veto of HB 1891.
On March 17th, the National Labor Relations Board upheld a ruling by an administrative law judge in a case involving a Fight for 15 strike against McDonald's. Bloomberg BNA reports that the judge was correct in denying McDonald's efforts to subpoena documents from unions and other groups that were involved in the protest. This finding is one chapter in the lengthy case in which the NLRB General Counsel alleges that McDonald's USA is jointly responsible with local franchises for unfair labor practices allegedly committed at local stores during or in response to protests by fast food workers. In this ruling, the board said probing protesters' motives won't establish a defense against the unfair labor practice allegations that it is a joint employer.
PAI reports that some 2,000 low-paid U.S. airport workers, marshaled and mobilized by the service employees, called off their planned one-day strike at major U.S. airport hubs scheduled for March 22nd after terrorist bombings that day at the Brussels International Airport and at a subway station in the Belgian capital killed at least 31 people and injured at least 200 more. The workers, including contract wheelchair attendants, skycaps, baggage handlers, checkpoint agents, and cabin cleaners had planned to strike against low pay, the right to organize, and better training at airports in Washington, D.C., New York City, Chicago, Miami, Boston, Newark, and Seattle. The workers are part of the nationwide Fight for 15 movement. They called it off out of respect for the innocent victims of the bombings, saying, "We stand in solidarity with the Brussels airport workers, and our thoughts and prayers are with the families that lost loved ones in this senseless tragedy. We must all work together to make our airports as safe as they can possibly be." The news this evening was read by Michael Savoir, Jen Zaman, Molly Madden, Chris Madden, and myself, Shaiklin Hams.
On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about several upcoming marches on Washington. For some reason, people think someone there is listening. And if they're not, the Democracy Awakening should get their attention. It's bringing together unions, socially responsible businesses, environmental activists, public interest advocates, media democracy groups, and organizations like Jobs with Justice and Code Pink, all demanding to get money out of politics and stop messing with our right to vote. Here's former CWA President Larry Cohen describing what's going to happen. He was at the Jobs with Justice National Conference in Washington, D.C. in February.
A little over a year ago, I sent a note out to thousands of activists in our union saying when my term ended in June, I wouldn't run again. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I didn't come here to talk about myself. But the main reason, as you just heard, was for me, you know, we each have our own journey. I felt like 10 years was enough. I loved every minute. Mostly, George and Ron will say you didn't really love every minute, but I loved most of the minutes. But I really felt like I wanted to go back to the streets. And when we started Jobs with Justice 29 years ago, lots of people said, way too radical. Lots of people said, in fact, I can't help but tell this. The general counsel, the AFL-CIO, said to me as a young organizing director, why don't you just arm the workers and shoot the bosses? So some people think that would be a good idea 29 years ago. Anyway, we didn't shoot the bosses, but we have been organizing amazing coalitions that you've heard about these last 2 days. That remains the guts of what we do. The guts of what we do is about direct action and solidarity. And that chant started out with, hey, hey, ho, ho, Frank Lorenzo's got to go. And he was one of the original New Robert Barons. The list is so long now, he's probably forgotten. But he was the chairman of Continental Airlines and took over Eastern Airlines. And we were able to take down Continental Airlines. We didn't really win that fight for those workers at Eastern Airlines, but we forced the whole company, the holding company, into bankruptcy. Part of what we do here is to talk about militancy and direct action. We're not just lobbyists. We're people who are willing to act with our bodies and to take a stand and to inspire others and to say that when we say, what do we do when we're under attack, we stand up, we fight back. We're also willing to take arrests in order to make a statement and fight back. Yeah. And so throughout the history of Jobs with Justice, in the 90s at the NLRB, we took over NLRB offices all over the country and got arrested. How many people here were involved in that? Stand up if you were at the NLRB and took arrest. And then I was with Laura only last year in St. Louis when at Peabody Coal, that company was gutting the health care and the pensions of miners who had sacrificed their lives in those pits and was gutting their health care. We stood in the streets in front of Peabody Coal with Jobs with Justice, with the United Mine Workers, and with faith and community leaders. We sat down in the street time and time again, and we took arrests at Peabody Coal for those miners. Tonight, I'm talking to you about the democracy awakening this spring. There's a flyer on the table. Grab the flyer. Text to 69866, rise up. April 17th and April 18th in this city, at this Capitol. On April 17th, this is Sunday, we will have a rally at the Capitol, family-friendly event. 10,000 and more people will be there. Why are we doing this? This is not what democracy looks like. It's not just about Scott Walker in Wisconsin, where students and others said almost 5 years ago, this is not what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like. Okay. So you're practicing now for April 17th and 18th. On the 17th, family-friendly, at the Capitol, mass rally, music, all kinds of stuff. On the 18th, we will surround the Capitol, and there'll be direct action, and there'll be at least 1,000 of us, all kinds of people, some well-known, some students, hopefully most of the people in this room, so it'll be well more than 1,000. And we'll be saying, we are sick and tired of what's happened to voting rights. We are sick and tired. What's happened to voting rights? We are sick and tired of billionaires running our political system. We are sick and tired of billionaires running this political system. We're sick and tired of what's become of this democracy at every level. And so on April 18th, we will take a rest. Text to 69866, join this movement. As Laura said, I chair what's called the Democracy Initiative. Jobs with Justice is part of that. CWA. Almost every environmental group, the NAACP, almost every civil rights group,
the USSA, almost every student group, and the list goes on, the democracy groups. And that democracy initiative, we started about 4 years ago when we couldn't get anyone confirmed in the Senate who the president had nominated. The National Labor Relations Board was ready to literally go down the drain because they would have no more members left by the end of that year. And millions of us got together and we fought that. We got the Senate to change their rules and we changed those nominations. And that was a victory. And part of what we have to think about when we're in this room is that these victories are tough to come by. When we celebrated 25 years of Jobs with Justice, we put out a book, 25 Years of Jobs with Justice. And the first chapter in that book was written by a woman named Maddie Stiegel. Maddie was a woman who had been through the voting rights fight herself in Nacogdoches, Texas. And we had a Jobs with Justice fight in Nacogdoches to get the workers in the university cafeteria a collective bargaining agreement, recognition for their union. And Maddie was quoted at the end of her chapter by saying, we have left our workplace a little better for the ones that come after us. And so we have to be satisfied right now that so many in this room have left our workplace or our community by the fights we take on a little bit better. But we also have to realize that overall, we're getting ground down. That overall, in the whole history of Jobs with Justice, we stood up for three issues: organizing and bargaining rights 29 years ago, and where are they today? The standard of living 29 years ago, where are they today? Almost all the growth in this economy has gone to the top 1%, and that ain't right. And we have to stand up and we have to fight back just as we did then. And so on April 17th and 18th, and the notion of this democracy initiative is that if we don't work on the democracy as well as the economic justice, racial justice issues, if we let the democracy alone, if we say, well, this is the way the Congress works, they don't do shit, and that's the only way to describe it, and we put up with that, we become part of the problem too. So on April 17th, and particularly the 18th, we will be demonstrating that as people of faith, that as Jobs with Justice, that as unionists, that as students, that as community organizers, that as immigrants, that we're there together to say to this Congress, we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. What Fannie Lou Hamer said 50 years ago, and that's on her tombstone in Ruleville, Mississippi, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Well, how many of us in this room are sick and tired of being sick and tired? So as we continue to fight city by city and state by state and union by union and organizing drive by organizing drive, we also are building a mass movement, a political revolution in the streets, in elections, and wherever we can. And on the 17th and 18th, we make a statement. We make a statement to this Congress that we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And whether they're Democrats or Republicans, we expect them to sit down with us, to take a rest. We expect them to vote, to at least have a hearing, and let the Voting Rights Act come to the floor, and let the immigration bill come to the floor, and let the legislation to reverse Citizens United come to the floor. And then until it does, we will continue to take arrest, to take direct action, not only here at the Capitol, but more importantly, everywhere that you're building Jobs with Justice. Because it's really in those communities that we change this country. We can't change this country from the top down. We have to change this country from the bottom up. That's what Jobs with Justice has been about for 29 years. I couldn't be prouder to have helped found Jobs with Justice, and I couldn't be prouder to sit down and take a rest for, I don't know what it is for me, the 100th time on April 18th. I hope you'll be there with me. Take a rest, take direct action, take a stand, stand up, fight back. Thank you.
That was Larry Cohen. One of the speakers on April 17th is Jim Hightower. He says that most of the groups involved in Democracy Awakening are large, Washington, D.C. based, and they've been rather territorial in the past, too often focusing on only their own issues, needs, and budgets. That's changed, he says. Today, there's a shared recognition that progress on every one of our issues is hopelessly walled in by concrete bribery, by corporate bribery funds, K Street lobbyists, crony capitalism, avaricious laissez-faire ideology, and nefarious voter suppression. From climate change to the Walmartization of our economy to racial justice, it's understood that none of us can advance until all of us team up to tear down that wall. So, Democracy Awakening is Saturday, April 16th, starting with teach-ins, workshops, and nonviolent direct action trainings. Then, on Sunday, April 17th, there will be a big, colorful protest march followed by a rally for democracy on the Capitol lawn. On the 18th, there will be a Congress of Conscience, a day of direct action and advocacy. Check it out at democracyawakening.org. If that's not enough, preceding all this is Democracy Spring, starting with a Liberty Bell to Capitol Hill march, April 2nd to 11th. That's Philadelphia to D.C., accompanied by mass actions and sit-ins at the Capitol. You can find out more about that at democracyspring.org.
Two Pakistani women who joined the Sisters of Loretto are trained in solar technologies. They now run a mission west of Lahore, helping people become energy independent. Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
Celebrate Women's History Month with the women leaders of Stand Up KC, who are leading the Fight for 15 and union rights for low-wage workers. Join them Thursday, March 24th, for a free screening of the film Standing on My Sister's Shoulders and a guest speaker at the Tivoli Theater. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Film starts at 7. Following the film, hear from special out-of-town guest Rosalind Pellis. Please RSVP by emailing info@standupkc.org. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Well, they got women on TV, but
I still ain't satisfied.
'Cause co-optation's all I see, and
I still ain't satisfied.
They call me miss, they sell me blue jeans. Call it women's lip, they make it sound obscene. And I still ain't,
whoa, they lied.
I still ain't,
whoa, they lied.
And I still ain't,
whoa, they lied,
and I still ain't satisfied. Well, they got women prison guards,
but I still ain't satisfied.
With so many still behind bars, and
I still ain't satisfied.
I don't plead guilt, I don't want no bum deal. I don't want crumbs, I want the whole meal. And I still ain't,
whoa, they lied. Whoa, they lied.
I'm gonna
the crew. Whoa, they lied.
And I still ain't satisfied.
That was the Red Star Singers from the 1970s here. Teamster retirees, affiliates of Central States Teamster Pension Plans, will assemble in Washington, D.C. on April 14th to march on Capitol Hill to protest proposed pension cuts. We're expecting over 1,000 retirees representing 26 states and perhaps as many as 50 pension protection committees, such as the one we have here in Kansas City, to converge on Washington, D.C. to get the attention of our Senate, particularly that of Mitch McConnell, who has steadfastly refused to give some consideration to bills that have been offering alternatives to the proposed pension cuts. IBT officials will be present for the first time in assisting our effort, and we're expecting speeches from Senators Rob Portman, Republican of Ohio, and Marcy Kepper, who has proposed legislation, Keeping Our Pension Promises Act. Also to speak at this event. The march is a continuation of the efforts to propose the behind-closed-door attack on multi-employer pension plans and the actual snowball impact that has we've seen across the country as people come out to oppose any balancing of the budget on the backs of folks who've earned these pensions. So we're looking for a big event in D.C., and we certainly hope to get the attention of Congress as they continue with the business-as-usual practices of ignoring working-class interests.
Mm-hmm. Hello, everybody. KKFI is presenting an evening with Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, at All Souls UU Church on April 9th, beginning at 6:30 p.m. with a VIP dinner catered by Californos and includes a copy of her new book, Democracy Now! 20 Years Covering the Movements Changing America. Followed at 7:30 by a talk about the book and her experience as a journalist in the last 20 years. Thanks to KCPT and Rainy Day Books for their help with this event. An evening with Amy Goodman on April 9th at All Souls UU Church, 4501 Walnut Street, Kansas City, Missouri. Tickets for both the VIP dinner and the talk are at kkfi.org/events. Thanks for supporting KKFI.
Welcome to the last segment of the Heartland Labor Forum. This is Chris Mann. You've been listening to I Love My Teacher by Robbie Kay. In 2011, Save Our Schools sponsored a march to Washington, D.C. for public education. Tonight, I'll play an excerpt from Diane Ravitch, educational historian, giving her speech in Washington, D.C. at that rally. Also tonight, Melissa Tomlinson from Badass Teachers Association will give us a sneak peek into the upcoming July 8, 2016 march and rally for public education and social justice.
I'm a historian. There has never been a spontaneous grassroots organization of teachers, parents, students all coming together to say, save our schools. Today we're together, all of us, parents, students, school leaders. Promise yourself you will never forget this day. Today we join to protest the status quo. The status quo of high-stakes testing. The status quo of attacks on the teaching profession. The status quo of privatization. The status quo is wrong. Don't let them say you're defending the status quo. The status quo stinks. We're here today to protest No Child Left Behind and the race to the top, which are the same thing. Today we protest the mindless closing of public schools, their community's treasure. We protest punishing schools simply because they enroll large numbers of high-needs children. We protest the wholesale firing of principals and teachers under the euphemism of turning them around in transformation. We are here to insist the public schools are a public trust. They're not shoe stores. We insist when children have low test scores, they need help. They need attention. They don't need to have their school closed. We protest. We protest the billions and billions spent on tests, the billions spent on test prep, the billions spent on test security. And that's not enough. More billions for test security. We protest the imposition of business values in education. Yeah. Yeah. We protest the idea that principals and teachers will work harder if they're offered bonuses and if they live in fear of being fired. Carrots and sticks are for donkeys, not professionals. We protest the idea of turning education into a race. Education is a right, not a race. Races have one or two winners and everyone else loses. Our goal is to prepare all children to be winners in their own lives, no losers. We protest the federal government's insistence on evaluating teachers by student test scores. It's wrong. We protest the idea that state legislatures have the wisdom to know how to evaluate teachers. It's unprofessional. We are here to stand up for basic American values. We speak for millions of parents, teachers, children, school leaders. We speak for the towns and the cities and the villages and the communities of America, which depend on their local public schools. And their teachers will be there long after these terrible ideas have bitten the dust. Free public education, open to all, with no lottery, is a cornerstone of our democracy. Let us pledge instead today to build schools that reflect the best of our democratic heritage. Let us strive for excellence and insist on equity. Let us build schools that reflect our love of children, our love of learning, and our belief in the highest ideals of education. We shall persist and we shall prevail. Thank you so much.
Now we'll hear from Melissa Tomlinson. She's the Assistant Executive Director of Badass Teachers Association. Badass Teachers, or BATS as they're called, will be one of the major groups sponsoring the upcoming demonstration in Washington, D.C. I'm here with Melissa Tomlinson, the Assistant Executive Director of the Badass Teacher Association. Now, Melissa, you're the Assistant Executive Director. How long have the BATS been in existence, and why do you call yourselves Badass?
Well, BATS has been in existence, it'll be 3 years this June. And the name Badass came about kind of because we felt the need to draw attention. We wanted to remind teachers that they have a voice too, and especially with everything going on, it's never been more important than now for teachers to realize that they need to speak up.
Okay, and actually, why was the organization begun?
Why was it begun?
Yes.
Well, it started when a parent and a college professor were actually having a conversation in a parent group. I think it was a Dump Arnie Duncan group. And the question was asked, when are teachers going to have a place where they can safely speak? Teachers are very intimidated these days. They're afraid that they're going to get in trouble if they say anything wrong or anything against what's going on in education. So they wanted to kind of create a safe space for teachers to find each other and start having important conversation about what's going on, a place where they would realize that they're not the only one. There's been a lot of isolation for teachers going on in public education. The busier we are, the more we tend to stay in our classrooms and not talk to one another. So this created an open space, conversations begun, and networking and, you know, relationships were formed. So, you know, the movement kind of grew out of those relationships.
the purpose for tonight's program. The Badass Teachers are part of the planning committee, which is called Save Our Schools March Coalition. And you are sponsoring a People's March for Public Education and Social Justice. Can you tell us a bit about the plans for that?
Gladly. So the march is actually one day of a three-day event that we're having down in Washington, D.C., and it's July 8th, 9th, and 10th. So on the 8th, we are actually rallying in front of the Lincoln Memorial, start gathering around 10 a.m. We're going to have some entertainment and some free rally activities, and then we have speakers going on around 12 noon to 2 p.m., and then around 2 p.m. we're all going to kind of gather and bring everybody about again, and we're actually going to march to the White House. And along the way, we'll have soapbox speakers and you know, the chanting and different little kind of purposeful actions to bring attention from the public to what's going on in education. And then the 9th, the following Saturday, is a forum that we're having for organizers and activists at Howard University. And registration for that starts at 8 a.m. And that's going to be totally, both days are all totally family-oriented days. Everybody needs to be a part of this process. Parents, teachers, students, administrators. I'm actually going for my administration certification right now, and administrators need to know that they have a voice in what's going on as well. And then Sunday is going to be kind of a coalition congress where we kind of make steps for the next plan that's going to happen next.
Okay, and why do you think this march and rally and weekend of events needs to take place?
You know, education has been kind of the next, the most recent forefront war on public schools. After the war on drugs and the agendas from the various people on that kind of died down and were realized by the public, attention turned towards schools, this bank of money from the federal government that could be appropriated by private interests.
Okay. Is the march only open to teachers and educators? Or should other people come?
No, anybody should come. Education affects all of us. Education is how we develop the next generation in our society. And it's our responsibility as adults, whether we're parents or not, to make sure the next generation learns and becomes educated on how to improve society for the following generation.
And one of the demands for the march I read is to create racially just communities and schools. Can you elaborate on this a little bit?
Yes. You know, racism, some people believe that it's gone. We've had a black president for, you know, the end of his second term now, when it's really not. Racism has been so institutionalized and so integrated within our society that until we totally fight to bring true equity, especially with schools and funding and resources, when we totally bring that about, we still need to call it out where we see it. And right now in our schools is one of the biggest places that we're seeing it.
How can Kansas City listeners begin finding out more about the march? Is there some websites we can go to?
Right now, there's information up on Save Our Schools March website. We have information up on badassteacher.org website. We are in the process of creating an actual website for the coalition. We're hoping that will be launched this weekend. We have a Facebook page, Save Our Schools Coalition for Action. And then Badass Teachers Association is very big on Twitter, so we've been sending out a lot of tweets about it.
Okay, well, Melissa, we really appreciate this ahead of time rundown of the whole march and weekend. Do you have any final comments?
I don't. I just hope everybody, you know, takes a chance and looks at their schedule and really tries to make it. We're hoping for some really amazing progress. This is the first kind of coalition action from several different major groups. You have United Opt Out involved, Badass Teachers Association, you of the Network for Public Education, who's associated with Diane Ravitch, who's actually going to be speaking or, you know, going to do her best to attend. So it's important. It's really important that all these groups have come together and have made a definitive attempt to get on the same page with our messaging.
Okay, well, Melissa, we thank you again for taking the time, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Steve Earle with The Revolution Starts Now, and I'm Judy Ansel. And with me on the phone is Mark Grunberg for this month's Washington Window on Workers. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Good
evening, everybody.
We just did some reports on the upcoming marches on Washington, the Democracy Awakening, the Teamster Pension one, and then in July, the Teachers for Justice, for Public Education and Justice. Are you going to be covering those, Mark?
Yeah, I'll be covering those. Definitely the first two. July, it'll be a question of just juggling and doing other stories as well as that march. But I'll be here.
Well,
I don't think I'm going anywhere.
Well, I hope you get to take a vacation at some point. But anyway, I guess you can vacation on the mall while demonstrating with everybody else.
The
big news story this week has to do with a new Department of Labor regulation having to do with basically getting union busters out of the closet, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to start with the reaction on Capitol Hill. House Education and Workforce Committee Chairman John Klein said, "This regulation dramatically changes longstanding rules to benefit union bosses at the expense of workers and job creators." And then he went on to say, "This rule will chill employer free speech and make it harder for small business owners to navigate a host of complex labor rules. What the rule won't do is impose the same harmful consequences on organized labor." Well, turns out he's wrong about that. The harmful consequences on organized labor have been going on for years. So let's talk about what the old rule was, and then we can talk about what the Department of Labor has done to try to level the playing field. Can you do that?
Sure. The old rule was this, and the old rule has been in effect through various interpretations ever since 1959. If you're a union buster and you give the boss a speech to make it an anti-union meeting, but you don't say the speech yourself, you basically don't have to disclose anything. You can stay in the shadows. You can stay in the background while the boss reads the speech.
And let me just say say that the union busting industry, the union busting industry is a multi-million dollar industry that makes big bucks off of advising employers on how to disrupt a union, right?
Right. And with a lot of, I might add, winks and nods to the employers about the type of thing, saying, look, this is illegal, but, and then the but is that the penalties are little, and then they let the employer make the decision. But the whole point is the union busters could stay in the background under the old rule. Now, what the DOL is saying is direct or indirect participation in anti-union campaigns, you got to disclose. You got to say how much money you're spending. You got to say who your clients are, so on and so forth. And that's the big change in this rule, in so many words.
Yeah, now I remember there was a union buster who sort of told all, 20 years ago, Marty Levitt. He wrote a book called Confessions of a Union Buster. And I remember one of the things he said was that he went so far as to plant drugs in some member of the union organizing committee's car in order to get him not just fired, but arrested. And there were all kinds of dirty tricks that he confessed to. And he said it was some of these things were common practice in the industry. Now, would this change any of that? Are the union busters still going to be up to their dirty tricks?
They'll still be up to the dirty tricks. It's just that at least the spending and who they're spending it for will be disclosed. I mean, something like that, you're still going to need the police or something. But something like what happened in North Carolina a couple of years ago, where a former union buster blew the whistle to the New York Times about what his antics were for the company that hired him, will be something that will now be much more disclosed than had been disclosed before.
What did he disclose?
He talked about, okay, I'm going to advise the boss to say, look, I may think about moving the plant to Mexico type thing. If you threaten to move the plant to Mexico or you say you're moving to Mexico, then that's illegal. If you say, I may think about it, it's not illegal.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget.
The point is the union buster told the boss to say it that way. Now, this way, under this new rule, the union buster would have to disclose his role. In other words, planting the seed in the boss's mind, if you will.
I remember one bright union buster came up with the idea of just putting moving tags on all the machinery in the factory saying Destination Mexico, and the employer never says anything. They come up with all sorts of, you know, like clever ideas like that. So say I am working in a workplace and we're organizing a union. How do I find out who the consultant, that's a polite word for union buster, that my employer has hired? How do I find out about this now with this new rule?
Assuming this goes into effect, and you can bet it's going to be challenged from here to kingdom come in both Congress and the courts, the union busters, as I said, will have to file reports with the same office, interestingly enough, that unions have to file reports with, in the Department of Labor, and those reports are going to be available online.
So I could just look it up. I could just look it up online then. Representative Klein who's the head of the House Education Committee, was contradicted by Secretary of Labor Perez in your article. He said, by protecting unions from these onerous and invasive reporting requirements, the administration has made it clear. Oh, wait, this is Klein. I'm sorry. The administration has made it clear they're not interested in fair or democratic union elections. They're interested in tilting the balance of power toward union interests, no matter the costs. We intend to push back against this rule. Now, why is this balanced? Because you contradict this guy and you say that, no, in fact, this is balanced.
It is balanced because if you go to any union and you will find that every January, I know this well from being the secretary of my own union, you have to file a voluminous form telling you with the Labor Department, with that same office, by the way, telling what you're spending down to the penny. Paper clips, pencils, organizing, you name it. And those records are already on file and are available for public inspection through the internet at DOL and have been for 55 years. So unions already have to go through those hoops. More hoops than any corporation in this country has to go through.
Right. And of course, I'll add that unions don't typically hire consultants because they know how to organize. So they don't have to hire somebody to tell them how to win a union. It's the employers who hire the consultants. Well, that's all the time we have, Mark. We've been talking to Mark Grunberg from Press Associates, Inc., a union labor news service. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next month.
Okay. Talk to you next month. Thank you, Judy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Now for the calendar. And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar for March 25th, 2016. Standing on my sister's shoulders, the civil rights struggle of women for the vote with focus on Fannie Lou Hamer. Thursday, March 24th, 7 p.m. That's tonight. Tivoli Theater, 4050 Pennsylvania, KCMO 64111.
Run on down.
Labor Day and rally in Jeff City against right to work and repealing the prevailing wage law. Wednesday, March 30th, 10 to 11:30 a.m., lobby and noon rally. State Capitol, Jeff City, sponsored by Missouri State Building and Construction Trades Council. Missouri Kansas City Committee to Protect Pensions Rally, March 31st at 12 noon, Rotunda of State Capitol, Jeff City, to share the tremendous economic impact of proposed Teamster pension cuts, about $3 billion on the state economy with the state legislators. Construction Career Fair 2016. Saturday, April 2nd, 8:30 to 11:30 a.m., Mohart Center, 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO, 64109. All trades will be there. You must be 18 or older. Flint, Michigan Water Drive, Saturday, April 2nd, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., UAW 241 8040 Northeast, 69 Highway, Clay Como.
And that's it for the calendar. You can find our whole calendar on our webpage at heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can also find our archived shows and our upcoming schedule. And tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show will be called Should We Get Rid of the Electoral College? And an interview with Earl Wheeler, Lessons from KC Labor's Past. Earl Wheeler is a former president of the TWA Union and the Kansas City Labor Council. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.